Haymaker Coffee Company was established in 2021 to create the best coffee to fuel the underdogs who perseveres, who hustles, and have the give-it-all mentality to achieve their American dream. Haymaker Coffee only roasts top quality, specialty-grade coffee beans, resulting in brews that satisfies those who demand every drop from their coffee and day. If you work hard, run hard, fight hard, and play hard, we have your coffee right here.
Welcome into another edition of the Stripes Show podcast, fresh off the CJ Cup, just finished yesterday afternoon. What an amazing win for Rory. He defended his title there at the CJ Cup, back to number one in the official world golf rankings. And today we're joined by Andrew Putnam, who played in the CJ Cup. So you know what? Who better to talk about the CJ Cup than somebody who was actually there than rather the rest of us who were sitting on our couch wishing that we could play golf like these guys. How's it going, Andrew?
Yeah, doing great. Just glad to be home after 4 weeks on the road.
Yeah, let's get into that in a second. So, Andrew, 2018 Barracuda Championship winner. So you know what it's like to win on the PGA Tour. Yesterday, CJ Cup, Rory gets that win. How difficult is it? Because in 2018 and 2019, you had that chance to defend. Yeah. How difficult is it to defend on the PGA Tour?
Yeah, I mean, the depth of talent now is just even better than it has ever been. So it's extremely hard. You need a lot of good things to go right. Rory, maybe not as many as some of us, but yeah, it's very hard. Obviously you need the putts to be dropping to get a win.
I mean, it's good for the tour to have Rory back on top again. So Scottie Scheffler, not that Scottie Scheffler wasn't a worthy or good world number one, mm-hmm. but let's be honest, with everything that's happened in the last 8 to 12 months, it's good that Rory, not only is his game in form, but he has been so outspoken and such a defender of the PGA Tour. Yeah. It really is very good for the tour to have Rory back on top.
Yeah, I mean, he's kind of become the leader of, you know, and spokesperson of the PGA Tour. He seems to be the most level-headed and, you know, well-versed guy in all the issues surrounding all the new things coming at the PGA Tour. So obviously to get him to be playing as well as he has and be in that position is really good for us.
There's definitely been a line drawn in the sand, and we'll get into that later. I know there was some chip shots taken this week. Robert Garrigus took a few shots at Billy Horschel, who's been here on the podcast as a friend of ours, a really good guy. It really has. There's been a line drawn in the sand. You're either on one side or the other. There really is no more fence sitting, which in the beginning there seemed to be a lot of fence sitting where you didn't know what was going to happen. And like I said, we'll get into that later and what's going on. But let's talk about your start to the 2022-2023 season. Maybe I'm a little bit out of line here, but it looks to be statistically your best start yet since you've been on the PGA Tour.
Yeah, I've never gotten off to this quick of a start. I mean, it's really nice, obviously, to especially with all that's going on in the future and all the, you know, these elevated events and everything coming up, to get off to a good start and to, you know, allow yourself to be in those. So, you know, I've played a few years on the Korn Ferry Tour and gotten off to these kind of starts and kind of had things locked up and, you know, just a little bit more comfort being able to decide your schedule, and pretty nice to do that on the PGA Tour now.
Yeah. I mean, as we sit right now talking, you are eighth in the FedEx Cup standings, seventh in the official money list. I mean, that's mm-hmm. really high up there. And you look at last year's money list, you've almost made as much already in these few events that we've played in the new 2023 season than you made all year last year.
Yeah. Well, it helps to play in these, you know, $11 million events and play well. That's that definitely helps, you know, my money. I don't know what the FedEx Cup points. So those are kind of, they stay the same, but yeah, I mean, the payday is getting a lot better on the tour.
So many changes coming out on the tour. I mean, for example, on Saturday, you had the set, you are tied for the second round lead after Friday afternoon at the Zozo. You played with Ricky Fowler on Saturday. Yeah. Talk a little bit about that. And because Ricky's game has been really kind of up and down. And as once again, this week, it was not as good at the CJ Cup, but played great at the Zozo with a T2. Yeah. What are you seeing in Ricky's game that you think has got him turned around and going in the right direction again?
Yeah. I mean, it's always fun playing with him. He's a fan favorite. I mean, the fans over in Japan were incredible. They love their golf. As you know, they're probably the most fanatic golf fans out of anywhere. And he's a polarizing figure and someone who's very likable. And so, Yeah, I enjoy playing with him. I mean, I think we're out of the same recruiting class in high school. So we played a lot of matches together back in the day. And, you know, he's obviously a great player and getting back into form, and it's good. I think it's good for golf, good for the PGA Tour. And, you know, he's just a good dude. So it's nice to see him play better.
It absolutely is good for golf to have Ricky back up there playing well. And, you know, a lot of people are like, well, he's up, he's down, but that's just golf. Like, you can play really, really great one week and really nothing changes and not play great the next week. And it doesn't mean there's really anything wrong. Some courses just fit your game and your eye better than the course you played the week before. Correct.
Yeah. And I think he played a pretty good round on Sunday. He shot 4 under. I think I saw last week. So obviously still playing great. Just, you know, I saw Butch back out there with Ricky at Vegas. And I knew that was probably a good sign to get back to some feels that he had a lot of success with. So I'm sure the more they work together, the better it's going to get.
Yeah. So you're coming off a T29 at the CJ Cup. I know that you were up. I think on Friday, you were Thursday or Friday, you were in the top 10,
yeah,
I believe, and playing really, really well, but you've played a rough stretch of golf. So let's go back over this here. So you started, you're at the Sanderson Farms, which I believe is in the Central Time Zone.
Yep.
Then you went the next week and played in the Shriners, which is wet, you know, West Coast time. Then you went to Japan and played in the Zozo. Mm-hmm. And then the very next week you played at Congaree, at CJ Cup in South Carolina, which is East Coast time. So correct me if I'm wrong, 4 weeks, 4 completely different time zones. How the hell does your body even know what time it is?
I mean, to be honest, last week I felt like I was walking on the moon for the first like 4 or 5 days. I literally was just like, the head was spinning, and yeah, it was rough. I mean, traveling from to Vegas to Japan, it doesn't seem too hard to go to the West, but whenever you come back East, it's just, your body does not recover quite as well in it. I mean, I was playing with Troy Merritt the first day, and we were talking about our sleep schedules, and I was like, yeah, I've been up since 3:30. And he's like, dude, I've been up since 12:30 at night. I haven't been able to get to sleep since then. So and we had like, you know, like a 12 o'clock tea time. So I'm like, dude, you've been up for like 10 hours already. And yeah, we're just out there just trying to get through and trying to have some kind of focus. And then you add in playing on this course with these greens that like, literally you can't, like, if you go brain dead on one putt, you could hit it 20 feet by on a 20 footer and just look like a complete idiot. So it just was a very interesting week to be, you know, have sleep deprivation going on.
How much does the travel and the jet lag and that kind of stuff affect your golf game?
Yeah. I mean, it definitely has I think it affects like your mental game more than the physical aspect, but you know, mental bleeds in the physical, but obviously nice to have charter flights that they set up through the tour and through these events to get us to, you know, from Japan all the way to South Carolina. I mean, I don't think they would have gotten quite as good a field if they didn't have those flights, but yeah, I mean, it's hard, but you know, I guess I could call myself a veteran. I've been doing this for 10 years. So I've kind of learned how to adjust and just how to roll with the punches.
Yeah. The greens were like glass this week. I saw a couple Instagram posts. I saw one of yours. I saw some others where, you know, once those putts started sliding,
yeah,
if it didn't hit the hole, it could have gone 10, 12 feet past the hole. And it wasn't bad pace. It's just the way the downhill, you know, putts were.
Yeah. I mean, I've never felt like I've had to, like, I was literally trying to just lag 25, 30 footers, like not even trying to make them, just two putt. And if they drop, they drop, but they put a lot of the pins on these like little areas where, you know, it'd be into the grain going up to the hole. And then right after the hole, it's down grain. So if you try to make it and get that speed where you're going a foot or two by, it keeps rolling out 4 feet past. So you almost have to lag it up there. And it was tough.
Is it difficult, or actually how difficult is it with the types of grass as that changes from week to week? Cause you know, here, you know, most people listening to the podcast play either on the same greens all the time at their home club, or play in the same area and most of the same greens. So how difficult is the different types of grasses as you play week to week?
Yeah. I mean, for the average person, like if they had to do that, they would just be so clueless on how to play some of these like chipping shots and learn how to read grain and all this stuff. I mean, like I said, I've, you know, ever since college, we used to travel to the East Coast and get exposed to all these different kind of courses. So I've learned over 20 years how to adjust, but you know, the good thing about the PGA Tour is the greens are always so good and so fast. Like whether you go from Bermuda or Bent or Poana, I mean, the speed is typically somewhere 11, 12 on the stem meter. So that's not as big of an adjustment. But reading the grain and how the ball reacts is and chip shots are kind of the hardest thing.
Right. Some chip shots of grain really just, you know, grabs the hosel. Some doesn't. Some you're able to use.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, others are not. Different technique when you're chipping on Bermuda versus, you know, Poe or, and if it's wet versus firm or, you know, so that's the hardest part for me.
Yeah. And some golf courses change day to day. Like last year, I'm sure you'll remember this. Everybody remembers the Players last year. If you got out early on Thursday, you finished your round. If you didn't get out on Thursday, there's a good chance you didn't finish Thursday's round until Saturday. Yeah. And if you remember, it was like playing in a dome on Thursday afternoon because it had rained and it was really calm. But then Saturday it was below freezing and the wind was blowing like hell.
Oh yeah. So,
I mean,
I was in that afternoon. Everything. I was in that wave where I had to play in the blowing wind on 17 and I rinsed a couple balls. So I remember that.
Yeah. I mean, it was brutal. I will tell you living here in Ponte Vedra, I don't think we had as much rain in a year as we did that week. And I don't think we've had as much rain since then as we had in those 3 or 4 days. I mean, it really was insane. So hopefully this year, Mother Nature graces us with some beautiful weather for the Players. Cause that was brutal last year.
Yeah, that was one of the most challenging rounds I've ever had. Ended up missing the cut. I think I was in like top 15 going into, I think I played really well Thursday. And then that Friday round or something, I had a triple and a quadruple back to back 17, 18. They're playing into the wind. Just felt impossible. Just impossible golf.
It's unbelievable. That's
fun
crazy.
For the fans to watch, but not for us to play.
No. And you know what? Even as a fan, like after a while, it just becomes, okay, great. You know what? Just stop. Like it's painful to watch. It's like, it's not even fun. Cause if you love golf, you don't want to see people playing shitty that long. It's like, you know, you see a couple bad holes here and there. It's okay. It just makes you feel better about your game, but that was brutal golf. And it wasn't even fun for the fan because it was so damn cold.
Yeah. Yeah. That was weird. That was like a different weather system moved in. It happens in Florida every once in a while that time of year.
Yeah, it does. Out of Pepperdine, like you said, 10 years on the PGA Tour, Andrew, what's changed the most? What's different now for guys coming on tour in 2022, 2023 versus when you came on in 2011?
I mean, it seems like the tour has just gotten so young. Like there's just so many, you know, young 20-year-olds out there. There's not quite as many of those like 40-year-old veterans that are sticking around as long. It's just the competition's gotten so good and courses are getting long. And it just seems like just such a lot younger tour. That's just the biggest difference I've noticed.
How much of a help was it that your brother had played on the PGA Tour prior to you playing?
Yeah, that was extremely helpful. I mean, him being there, me being able to kind of see how he handled that, and him giving me some advice and I guess just learning by watching was, obviously gave me a step up.
Yeah. Cause I mean, guys coming out now, it just feels like, and I know we always say every generation thinks that their generation is different than the one before. And truth is history just tends to repeat itself, but it really feels like guys coming on tour today seem more ready to compete at a higher level than in years past. Would you agree with that?
100%.
Why is that?
I mean, I feel like, you know, sports in general just become more competitive. Like kids just playing golf, like they're dedicating their lives to golf starting when they're, you know, 8, 9, 10 years old. And then they go through these college programs that are so competitive and they have access to track bands and they all have access to TPI and nutritionists and mental coaches. I mean, we never even had a track man when that was only 2007 to 11. I mean, that wasn't that long ago. We didn't have access to anything like that. I mean, so they have every tool at their disposal that pretty much the tour players have. So the difference between the college and the tour, just not as there's not as big of a gap as there used to be, I think.
What do you think's changed golf more? The distance that people are hitting it? Or the data that we're getting that's telling them, or the two kind of married together and become one?
Well, I think they feed into each other. You know, the more data you get, the more you'll be able to optimize how your body works and the clubs and the swing and knowing what generates the furthest carry. And also, I think technology has changed a lot. Like, it's forcing you to hit the ball in a certain way that produces less spin, the high ball flight. And so kind of all that button together has created, you know, this competition that we have now.
Have you found yourself changing anything you're doing to chase distance? Because distance has become, I mean, obviously Bryson put a real true spotlight on it, but we're getting guys coming out now, like Chris Goddard coming out of Oklahoma and playing on tour. Guys are hitting in a long ways other than just Bryson. DJ's been hitting a long ways forever. There's a lot of long hitters on the tour.
Yeah.
Has distance really become more important than accuracy?
Yeah. I mean, I think all these stats guys that have come out and have proven, like, I think the stat is like, if you drive it in the fairway, if you compare that to someone who hits it in the rough, but if they're 15 yards further or closer to the hole, it's the same advantage, you know, the same kind of average score from there to the hole. So 15 yards and you can hit it in the rough, I mean, that's a huge advantage, obviously. And if you're hitting in the fairway, I mean, a lot of these guys who are long now, they hit it just as straight as the guys who are crooked. So, I mean, it's not like they're giving up a lot of accuracy with distance. They're still very accurate.
Have you changed playing
with a guy like Keegan Bradley? I mean, he's the guy who, like, he hits it over 300 and he hits up over 60% of his fairways. That's like the money stat. You know, if you do those two things, it's like pretty much hard to finish outside the top 50 on the tour.
Have you changed anything you're doing to try and gain distance?
I try not to change my technique too much. I mean, I've just tried to stay on, like, I've used that stack system, you know, the swing speed that Fitzpatrick has done, and speed sticks and different stuff. And just, I don't know, I've kind of gone through some injuries here and there, and I'm just trying to stay healthy and trying to keep my speed instead of losing it at this point.
Have you noticed some gains from using those training devices and aids?
Yeah. I mean, if you're able to be consistent with it, I mean, hands down, they will give you 5 to 10 mile an hour club head speed more.
Wow.
The hardest thing for me is training in season with all this travel. And, you know, if my back's sore one week, you know, I'm like, well, I'm not going to be sweet, you know,
right,
training with these speed sticks. Or if your hand's sore, or, you know, there's just so much golf now that we play, like, you know, I'm playing like 30 weeks or over 30 weeks. It's hard to find that time to, like, dedicate yourself to gaining speed and not getting hurt and being able to compete at a high level. So I haven't figured out the formula yet, but I try to do the best I can.
Yeah. I mean, it's difficult because, like you said, there are a lot of events. And so that kind of leads me into, you know, the elevated events now, the 13 elevated events, the way I understand it is those are the events that most people are going to want to play because you're playing for the most money. I mean, let's be honest, at the end of the day, that's the prize. The prize is you're playing for the most money. So are those 13 events now the most important events to you as a tour player?
I guess there's two ways to look at it. I mean, I heard someone talking about it, how, like, Billy Horschel, for example, looks at a schedule at the beginning of the year and thinks, okay, my goal is to be top 30 on the FedEx Cup, get to the Tour Championship. What events do I have to play to get there? Well, I mean, if you go at it from that approach, maybe you don't have to play all those elevated events. I mean, obviously the competition is going to be harder. The courses are tougher, but there's the same amount of FedEx Cup points as that, as if you go to, say, this week, you know, the Butterfield Championship in Bermuda, where the field is not as great as some of those elevated events. So
right.
I don't think it's all about, you know, just the money, you know, for us. I mean, we're obviously, like, we got to play well enough to keep our jobs and finish high enough on the FedEx Cup point to get in those invitationals the next year. So I think you kind of have to have a balance of, you know, a mix of both.
Does it benefit you then to play some of the non-elevated events because I don't want to say it's easier, but there's a better chance of you finishing higher because the field is not as deep?
Yeah, that's pretty much what I'm saying. I mean, obviously you got to play well no matter what, like, every week is the competition's great, but
right,
just might not be quite as good, you know, in some of those events that are elevated.
I mean, because my point, and Travis and I did a podcast last week, and you can go back and listen to it at any time. And it's that, I just think that, for example, waste management, is now an elevated event. I know the Wells Fargo is an elevated event. Of course, the Players has always been an elevated event. But somebody like, for example, Butterfield Championship or Sanderson Farms, are these guys, are they riding? It, to me, from a fan perspective, I see it as, hey, these 13 events, those are the big boy events. The other events, how could a sponsor, if they're not going to get the same field, why is that sponsor expected to write the same check that Wells Fargo is going to write for an elevated event and probably have a better field?
Well, they're obviously not going to have to pay quite as much, right? The purses are going to be well above that for these elevated events.
What keeps those lower events from basically becoming, for lack of a better term, feeder events? Like, hey, these are the events you play to get into the big, to get into the other events.
That's a good question. I don't know. It's going to be tough. I mean, I was hanging out with Max in the airport yesterday talking about it. He's like, yeah, they're going to have to figure something out, how to get good players to play in those events, whether they pay players to show up or what have you. I mean, those sponsors aren't going to be happy if they're getting a field with none of those top 20 guys.
Right. But at the same token, and I said this in the podcast as well, I don't disagree with what the tour has done. I understand why they've done this, whether it was coming down the road a long time ago or whether the hand was forced because of what's going on with the investment group. I get all that. I understand why we are where we are. It just feels like a slippery slope to somewhere that could go bad if it's not watched. In other words, I don't want to have, or maybe the answer is fewer events. Like you said, you play 30 times. Is that the right formula? Do we need to play fewer events?
Yeah, I think we do. I mean, I think that's one of the issues is the tour has grown grown too big. Like everyone would admit that. Like there's just too many events. And the problem is they're all great events. They're all run very well and the sponsors are incredible.
Right. Like, and the charitable impact, amazing.
Yeah, and the impact, and you get to play in all these different markets, and you know, these people love having you there. I mean, like the Zozo, for example, they're now like, well, why would we have a tournament if we're not gonna be, you know, we're gonna be in the fall and we're not really gonna count for anything. We're not gonna have FedEx Cup points. Well, right. Japan's an incredible market. The player, I mean, everyone who went there loved it. Like the service that they provide you, hands down best out of any tournament. I mean, we had private Range Rovers taking us all over town, wherever we wanted. I mean, just like rolling out the red carpet. And so, yeah, it's going to be sad to lose some of those events, but if they're not getting the top players, I don't know how they're going to survive or why the sponsors are going to be writing those checks.
What's the vast majority opinion on tour from players? Do they like the elevated events and the elevated schedule?
I couldn't tell you what the vast opinion is. I mean, everything's happened so fast. I mean, I've only talked to a handful of guys. I mean, everyone has very different opinions. I know some of the guys who are going to be in the PIP guys who have to play in them. They're not probably not that happy that they have to commit to play every single one of those events. I mean, I know Kevin Kisner made some comments about how like his game doesn't fit a lot of those events. He's like, dude, I'm going to have my worst year ever because all these events I got to, you know, kind of geared towards bombers.
Right.
And so, I don't know. I don't know if there's much uniformity around this whole new schedule.
Glenfiddich, the world's most awarded single malt Scotch whiskey, is expertly crafted and made with extraordinary care. Each single malt is a work of perfection.
Yeah, because if you play those 13 and you play the four majors, now you're at 17.
Yeah.
And then is there a requirement on playing non-elevated events?
I think there is. I think you got to play at least three. I think that's what I heard.
So now you're at 13, 17, you're at 20. You're at 20 events, which, you know, 20 events is fine if you finish high. But then once again, if you don't, you need to add more events so that you can have a better chance to be in the FedEx Cup. But like you said earlier, when we started, you off to a good start in top 10, eighth in FedEx Cup allows you to kind of pick and choose where you want to play as we head down further into the season. Correct?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's the beauty of getting off to a fast start. Can pick and choose a little bit better, but Yeah, I mean, it's hard to know. Even with this year, it's all new. So I don't know. You know, there's so many events. It's going to be that whole wraparound all the way through the fall. So, just got to keep playing.
And this is the end of the wraparound season. Next year it will stop. Right, we will have a true off season and then start over the beginning of the year at the Sony.
I mean, tournament TOC. That's what they have planned at this moment, but we'll see.
Because everything could change. So, obviously. You know, all the live talk is what it is. Mm-hmm. I feel like we've weathered, and I say we, I'm not part of the PGA Tour, but as a fan of golf and the PGA Tour, I feel like we've weathered the initial storm of live. And there's lots of arguments on how it was handled within the tour and how it was handled with live and everything else. But until the official World Golf Rankings situation gets handed out, that seems like until that's straightened out, that we've seen who's going to go. And then once the World Rankings thing kind of settles out, we could see some more. Is that the feeling that you guys get as players? Those who have gone are gone?
Pretty much, yeah. I mean, you know, Jay's been operating just by the PGA Tour rules. And basically, once you go, you can't come back. So. It's pretty much, I mean, everyone should know by now that's the consequence. If you decide to go, you're not coming back, and that's how it is.
You guys as tour players, you have no issue with that. You mean that's you guys have to love that. Once you go, you're gone. You can't come back and then try and take, you can't go get your money over there and then come back and try and get some of ours.
No, I mean, it makes perfect sense. Like that's what we signed up for. I mean, we know what we're getting into. And the fact that the players early on thought they could have it both ways was, obviously, they had someone chirping in their ear, but it was hard to believe that they thought that was going to fly.
Are you aware of anybody else that will be or could be going over?
I've just heard rumors that some European guys might be forming a new team, but I don't really know any specifics.
Has anybody
Which is kind of interesting, though, because it seems like the core of the U.S. Ryder Cup team has kind of stuck onto the PGA Tour, right?
Right.
Be weird if some of the Europeans left and went to live and they weren't a part of that Ryder Cup. Cause I know that's such like an important part of their, I don't know, just their golf is that competition. And I guess we'll see what happens.
have you heard maybe that John Rahm could be somebody we could lose?
I haven't heard that name. No,
you haven't. Okay, good. Good, good, good.
I hope not.
No. Yeah, exactly. That's the thing is that, you know, I've got mixed feelings on this. I would hate to have a major contested where we don't have the best players in the world, no matter where they play. I've been very open and honest that I don't like live. I don't like the fact that guys have gone. We've had plenty of guys that were friends here of the podcast, but they've gone and done their thing, and that's fine. You can make your decisions. But on the other side, I would hate to have a major championship that doesn't have the best players in the world because then doesn't feel like a major championship.
Yeah. No, I agree. And I think the majors are going to allow those other guys to play. But at some point, like the world ranking is going to get so high that are so low that they're not going to be able to get into those events. So they won't be the best players in the world anymore because they have no ranking points.
I mean, I don't fully understand the official World Golf Rankings, obviously, like you do, being a part of it. Do you believe that they will adjust so the LIV Tour will be able to gain official World Golf Rankings, or do you think they will stay in their ground?
I mean, I don't see how they could. I mean, unless they like amend their process. I mean, if you look at all the different criteria you have to fit to be a part of the World Rankings, like, well, the LIV hasn't really met almost any of those qualifications. So I feel like the LIV, if they were to do it right, they would format their tour in a way that would maybe align with those world ranking points. I think that they're trying their hardest to get world ranking points with how they look now, but I think eventually they're going to be forced to, you know, change the way that their tour looks like in order to get world ranking points.
Doesn't that start with moving to 72 hole events?
Yeah. I mean, whatever that is, I don't know. I don't know how many of those things, how many of those criteria you have to meet, but obviously having, you know, more players in the field and having right. a qualification system for that and all that, you know,
right.
It seems like they have to have that because for guys, you know, probably I would say the bottom 15 to 20 guys on LIV, it's like, well, they're getting invited to play in these tournaments with all these other players who have these, you know, high world ranking or high in the world ranking. Well, it's not really fair that they are going to be getting world ranking points when they haven't really earned their way on, I guess. In the same way that the PGA Tour kind of provides that process for earning your status.
Right. So, there's no way to qualify for the LIV Tour.
Yeah, not really. It's based, I mean, obviously most of the guys playing out there have some merit and some, you know, they've done something in their golf career to get to that point, but maybe they haven't proven themselves quite as much as the guy who's made it through the Korn Ferry Tour onto the PGA Tour. So it doesn't seem right for them to be getting, you know, the amount of world ranking points they would be if they were allowed to have them.
Right. Has this whole rift line drawn in the sand, has it cost you any friendships?
No, not me. I have friends that are on LIV and I totally understand it. I mean, I'm like, I totally get it. And it's never something that I would lose a friendship over. I mean, it just, that doesn't make sense to me. I mean, people have reasons for going and obviously the money is a huge part of it and the schedule. And I totally understand. I mean, got no problem.
Yeah. And that's the thing is I understand why some people went. My issue is then when people like, for example, Robert Garrigues called Billy Horschel a douchebag and said he needs to shut the F up. That, to me, that's where it's just going too far. And I mean, Garrigues, yeah. I know Garrigues probably not the most well-liked guy, around.
Garrigues talks, I mean, that kind of comes off as, I don't know if you, I mean, I know him pretty well. I've talked to him a lot in person. He's a very funny dude, but probably doesn't sound quite as good coming off on if you did that through social media or whatever than if it is in person, because he's very, like, he's a very lighthearted, joking guy.
Right. Now, didn't he actually applied early on to go play on LIV. He applied for a release and didn't get it, didn't end up going.
Yeah.
But he was very interested in going.
Yeah. He got bumped out.
Right.
I asked him about that. I'm like, what happened, man? I thought you're all set. He's like, yeah, apparently some better players signed up, so they bumped me out.
Bigger name online too. They're like, yeah, we got to go.
Yeah.
Were you approached by LIV ever, Andrew?
No.
Never?
No.
Were you hoping you would have been?
I don't know. I mean, it would have been interesting in the beginning just to hear their thoughts on what's going on. I'm always open to hearing people out.
Are you happy now you are where you are?
Yeah. I mean, the tour is obviously in a great spot and it's probably the best it's ever been. So it's for the players, the people playing golf, there's never been a better time. So whether you're playing LIV or PGA Tour as a player, at least in terms of compensation and tournaments, it's the best time in history of the PGA Tour.
Yeah. Wouldn't you say there's more opportunity now on the PGA Tour than maybe ever before?
Yeah. I mean, for everyone, you know, saying how bad LIV has been, I mean, there has been some positives. Obviously, it's elevated competition. It's elevated the PGA Tour. They've had to relook at things and they've had to make some changes. And I mean, you can just look at it. Like, our purses have gone through the roof.
Right.
I mean, that would that have happened without competition? Probably not. So I think it's healthy and I think it's going to make for a better product. It's just a little messy right now. And, you know, it's kind of been a tough process, but I think it'll work itself out.
And isn't the door open to find the next DJ, the next Bryson, the next Brooks?
Yeah. I mean, I think we're, you know, there's so many stars coming up. There's always new stories and new people and new talent that's going to be displayed. And the PGA Tour is a great way to, you know, they've developed like a media arm and they've developed their business model in a way that's really going to help players to become the next stars.
Will you be watching LIV Finals this week in Miami?
Maybe a little bit. I mean, depends if some of my friends are towards the top, but I don't know. I mean, I've tuned in here and there just to see what it's like. I mean, just curiosity, you know. Obviously I've been playing for what is it, like $50 million. Well, it might be interesting to watch the ending and just see like how people are responding with that. I mean, that's wild how much money you know, some of these guys are making more in 6 weeks and, you know, tripling their career earnings. It's pretty wild.
Speaking of playing for money, and obviously, you know, listen, I know you're not playing for $50 million, but anyways, playing when you are playing, does it ever cross your mind while you're playing that this putt could be worth X amount of dollars? This drive could be worth X amount of dollars. Does that ever cross your mind in tournament competition rounds?
I would lie if I said no. I mean, I try not to, but I guess I haven't quite gotten to the point in my career where I've made enough to where the money doesn't matter, like for some other guys. Like, right. So
you gotta have a lot of money for that shit not to matter, though.
Yeah, I mean, I honestly, if I'm being honest, I did think about it at Zozo when that last hole, Ricky had like an 8-footer. And he kind of like, you know, kind of looped in. And I was like, if he would have missed that and I would have made this, that would have been a solo second. And well, now I got this 4-footer down the hill. It's kind of a slider. There's a lot of money on this. And it crossed my mind. And then I tried to forget about it. But it's hard to not think, you know, about that stuff when you're coming down the stretch. And it's fun. It's honestly fun to think about that. It's like, that's what we play for, you know,
right?
The opportunity to make a lot of money. And it's what's exciting about golf and playing as a pro.
Right. No, that's exactly it. A lot of people say, no, it never crosses my mind. I always think that's a big load. Like, it's absolutely at some point has to cross your mind. This putt could be worth X. If I make this and he misses, it's worth that. Yeah, absolutely. It has to cross.
I mean, the thing is, like, how many times in our life can we say, hey, I got this 4-footer and if I miss it, it's going to cost me $400,000. Or if I make it, it's going to make me $400,000.
Right. That's a house.
That's honestly like, it's kind of a cool thought. It's like, man, this is like, I don't get many opportunities. Like, it's just cool to think about it and just to be in the moment and be like, hey man, I made a 4-footer for $400,000. Like,
right. And it's even cooler that you made it.
Yeah. It's a lot cooler.
Exactly. So before we let you go, man, we do a thing at the end here. I'll call you. It's called our emergency 9. I'll ask you 9 quick questions and you just give me the first answer that comes to mind. So here we go. First, number one, what's the best golf shot you've ever hit?
As an amateur playing the US Open Pebble Beach, number 17, I remember Phil, KJ and Padraig watching on that same tee there on number 4. And I was so nervous. I couldn't even feel my body and back left pin. I think it was at like 220. I remember hitting this 4-iron to like 4 or 5 feet. And I was like, okay, maybe I can do this for a living.
Damn. That's awesome. Favorite sports team or athlete?
I mean, Seahawks, obviously that's, you know, my go-to up here in Seattle. It's nice that the Mariners are playing a little bit better. We're able to cheer for them.
Yeah.
But growing up, I love Gary Payton, the glove. I mean, he was like my idol.
Yeah. I guess you're not missing Russell Wilson much this year.
Not as much. I mean, I like the guy, but yeah, it's hard. It's been nice to, you know, to see him get off to the start he has.
Who'd have thought Geno Smith would be outplaying Tom Brady and Russell Wilson 7 weeks into the season?
I mean, he had what, through 4 weeks, he had like the record most passing attempts ever in history of the NFL. I mean, geez. I mean, obviously learned something from Russell.
It did.
For a while.
What's your go-to food on the road?
Oh, go-to food. Probably like, I love like Thai and Indian food. I'm all ethnic food.
Nice.
Not American, none of that stuff.
Most famous phone number in your cell phone?
Probably have to go with, it's weird to say it, but probably Max Homa. I mean, he's become probably one of the more famous guys.
He is.
I mean, I used to play with him. You know, my first few years on Corn Ferry, we'd stay together a lot. And yeah, he's gotten to be, at least in the golf world, he's the most popular.
He is. He really is. Player you're most nervous to be paired with on the PGA Tour?
Well, I haven't played with Tiger Woods, but Phil Mickelson was probably my most nervous playing with him, especially my first time out.
Wow.
But he was great. I mean, he kind of took me under my wing and was like, he was super helpful that first time. I played with him in a final round on like a Saturday in Houston. Got paired with him and I was just so nervous. And I'm sure he could tell I was having some jitters and he was able to help me out.
That's cool. During the pandemic, you know, side hustles became like the thing. Everybody kind of started their own thing. If you had a side hustle, what would it be?
I mean, I'm pretty active in like real estate. I have like a part of a development company with a friend. So that'd be my side hustle.
Nice. And
our family's kind of in the process of, we're building a hotel and these golf fields at Chambers Bay. So we got that going for us too. So,
oh, wow.
I love real estate. So it kind of is a side hustle.
That is. What's the craziest golf tip you've ever gotten and where'd you get it from?
I mean, one time I think I was playing pretty bad and I asked the caddy if he had any tips and he was like, yeah, I think you need to take a couple weeks off and then you need to quit. I think he was taking advantage of me at my low point.
How many holes in one have you had?
12.
Wow.
One more than my oldest brother, Joel, not Michael, not my other PGA Tour brother. My oldest brother, Joel, just passed. Really? Him up.
Damn.
Yeah.
12. That's unreal. Music on the golf course. Yes or no?
Yes.
And what genre?
Probably go with like some kind of country hits.
Nice. That. I'm always good with that. And then last but not least, I know we've already asked you 9 questions, but when and what made you trim the hair?
Got my hair cut at the US Open. My wife was actually the one who did the honorary cutting, snipping of my hair. And gosh, I just was getting so sick of it. I don't know if you ever had long hair before, but like,
no,
dude, dealing with this stuff, first time in my life I had to buy conditioner. It just was getting out of control. So I just had enough of it.
So
best decision ever. My daughter hates it. She still is like, can't believe I did it, but
she wants you to grow back.
Yeah. She keeps telling me that she'll just straight up be like, Dad, I don't like your hair. I like it. You need to grow up and grow it out.
But it ain't coming back.
No.
And then coming back. All right, good deal. So what's your, after the crazy 4 weeks, you obviously deserve a few weeks off. I appreciate you taking the time to do this today on your first day home.
Yeah.
What's your schedule moving forward? When can we see you play golf again?
I'm just having 1 week off. I'm going to go to Mexico, Houston, RSM. I'm just going to keep her going. I mean, I'm playing well, so figure why not?
Got to strike while the iron's hot.
I'm a golfer. I don't know what else I'm going to do. The weather's finally turned here in the Northwest. I don't really want to be up here too much.
No, will you take some time to practice this week or will you fully enjoy your week off?
I'll get back out there on probably Wednesday or Thursday or Friday. Usually try to first couple of days, try to be pretty mellow and get my life organized and hang out with my kids.
Nice.
My
wife. Good deal. Well, Michael, I appreciate your time, man. Good luck to you this year. Great start, man. Yeah. Awesome. Hope it continues. And hopefully we see at these elevated events and hopefully we see you all the way at the end of the Tour Championship.
Yeah, I'll be there. Thanks for having me.
Appreciate it, man. Have a great day.
PXG has done it again with the launch of a new lineup of drivers, fairways, hybrids, and irons. The new Gen 5 golf clubs deliver significantly increased MOI, faster ball speeds, longer distances, and tighter dispersions, all coupled with the exceptional feel and sound golfers have come to expect from PXG. Schedule your custom fitting or buy online at pxg.com.